Well, hi and welcome. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Great. Progress notes, wins. Anyone? Even brief? Let me give you an overview of what I have in mind today. I want to just spend a couple of minutes looking at some final class notes, some things that I have in mind going forward. And then we have Mary Beth's roadmap, and then the topic for today is the wellness, new wellness story. And anything that you want to ask or add, please do so. Any wins or progress notes as we begin? Anybody just
Steve, this is
in?
Terry Holmes. Actually, please. I just wanted to find out about getting a copy of the workbook.
Okay. That's one of the things that I was going to mention. I am going to, as my gift to each of you, have my fulfillment house send you a hard copy of the workbook. And that will give you an idea, if you want to use it with clients, what it would be like for them and what they're seeing. And that's the workbook that if you want to order copies of that, you can get your name on the cover at no cost to you when you order a minimum of 10 copies at your MentorPath partner rate, which is 60%, and then you can charge 100% or whatever you want to charge for that. I'll have my graphics person do a new first page, or front page rather, with your name on it, presented by and your name and your firm, or however you'd like it to be, and a new first page with your information, message, contact information, anything like that. So that's something that you'll see coming within a few days, however long it takes with the Christmas holidays for them to ship it out. Okay.
Holiday stuff. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me go ahead and just mention the things that I have in mind while we're doing that. You're going to receive some things from me in addition to the workbook. One is a hard copy of a diploma, a certificate as a New Life Story coach. I'm also going to send an example of a marketing piece with a certificate. It's a kind of a postcard style brochure, and I'll have the template for that if any of you would like to have that. Another attachment is I'll send the MentorPath partner letter that explains everything from how to get to the registry, and that's accessible from several different places on my site, the registry of New Life Story coaches for internal and for corporate referral, and be sure and put all of your current information, specialty, picture, that sort of thing. And if you have any trouble with that, just contact my IT guy, Bill, support@MentorPath. That's all in the letter. And there are a number of things in the letter that I won't go over. There's a license agreement with a co-branding. It's stuff that you'll see that is to protect our brand. I put a good deal of effort into continuing and enhancing and expanding our brand. And that way, when somebody looks for a coach, they'll be attuned to and oriented to you and your listing there. I'm going to have quarterly mentor groups the first Monday, beginning February the 1st, and each 3 months after. I send a white paper prior to the group and a reminder and the teleseminar number. It's recorded in case some people have schedule problems. During that seminar, we usually talk about marketing aspects, success stories, best practices, and that sort of thing. We're going to do something a little bit different for the one in September. It's going to be kind of more of a seminar that's going to be on attachment. So that's going to be something that I think you'll want to attend and think you'll find really beneficial. Now, the fee, just the kind of the overhead fee for maintaining your license, is included for the first year in the registration, and after that, it's $45 a quarter. to maintain the license, to maintain the registry, the mentor groups, the white paper, and that sort of thing. It's just kind of to cover overhead. But I'll send out something at a year from the completion, not the beginning, the completion of the course. So like in January 2015. Now, any questions about any? I know this is a very brief overview, but I think everything will be explained in the things that I send. I'm also going to send you a logo, New Life Story Wellness logo that you can do on your website or business card if you'd like to do that. Any questions about anything that doesn't make sense or that you'd like to add or ask at this point? I'm also going to send a sample of a press release, and this is just a reminder to not forget about things like a press release, like to your local or regional paper, like to the business journal in your area, or maybe even a neighborhood, but, it'll be a reminder and one, one idea of a press release, and then you can customize it for you for that. There's also going to be access to an affiliate agreement. I limit any affiliate status, MentorPath partners, just to the people who have trained with me. Nobody else does that, because I want to be sure the people who represent any of this material really knows it, and it's 50% of sales on digital products and 40% of sales on hard copy like the workbook and that sort of thing that you get back. You can either sign up to do it from your website or, there'll be a full explanation of that in the letter. And any questions, just ask me any technical questions, ask Bill. Any thoughts or questions about any of that at this point?
I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Not
anybody
sure
else?
Who
else? Okay. Anybody else want to check in or add or ask anything or have any progress notes or wins?
Yes, Eve, this is Jen Powers. Hi.
Welcome. Hey, how are you?
Hi, good. I just want to say how awesome all of that sounds and how supportive you're being of us using that. And I know it's a lot of work went into that, so thank you. Looking forward to seeing that. Mm-hmm.
And I hope it all makes sense. I think it will with the material, but if it doesn't, just give me a call. I really want to support your practices and expand.
Yeah.
In whatever way possible, we'll generate referrals for each of you.
Nice. Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, Dave. Hi, this is Lalia checking in.
Welcome. How are you?
Oh, good. Trying to not get too crazy.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It sounds like you've been
successful
so far.
Oh, thanks.
Okay.
There's mental strategies, as we all know. Thanks for, again, I echo the sentiment. Thank you for making this wonderful opportunity available to us and for your willingness to just share so much and give so much. And I guess this is the holiday to be giving. So thank you for all that.
Well, thank you. This is my treat and my privilege. It's exactly what my passion is, and to enjoy seeing each of you really liking and absorbing this, and I think it's going to be a part of, and hopefully a part of your ongoing success story. So I'm very excited to see what each of you are doing and going to do.
Great. Thanks.
Someone else? Okay. Are you ready to do your roadmap, Mary Beth?
Yes, sir, I am.
Great. And thanks for sending it around, too. I look forward
to
hearing it. Go ahead, whenever you're ready.
Okay. I guess to start off, I just would like to say that this was such an interesting thing to do. Even when it's not on yourself and you're doing it with a client, it's really an interesting thing to do, moving them forward and working with them on this type of platform. It was really, really enlightening in different aspects. So to start off here with the roadmap, Shelley is one of my clients. She's a middle-aged woman who came to me with these ongoing issues I termed it dysfunctional in the roadmap, but it revolves around her mother's idea and expectations for her moving through her life and the ideas around what Shelley's life should be in terms of the way her mother sees it versus the way Shelley herself sees it. And there's been several things that have gone along in their relationship. But when she came to me, the biggest problem that she was having is that her mother is very disrespectful in terms of Shelley's marriage to her husband, mainly because her husband comes from a different background and a different type of environment and upbringing than what Shelley herself came from. And so her mother thinks that Shelley's husband doesn't, quote, unquote, fit into the family very well. And he's a little bit, he's very well educated, and that tends to be taken as him looking down on the rest of the family in some fashion. So Shelley was really, at this point, just recognizing the fact that she's always been ridiculed and kind of the center of scrutiny when it comes to the relationship with her husband and even, you know, other things in her life. But it took her quite a bit of time to realize and recognize the fact that she herself has been being controlled by her mother's behavior. And not wanting to be disrespectful to her mother, Shelley's first instinct has always been to run from the situation rather than to just try to sit down and speak with her mom. So what she wanted to do was to try to find her voice in a respectful way to let her mother know that that particular behavior was just not acceptable for her. So to own her story, Shelley's biggest task was coming in the form of trying to find a way to speak her mind in a manner in which she felt was not being disrespectful to her mom. She's owned the fact that previous discussions with her mother as well as her male siblings to this point had ended in shouting matches and arguments because she herself just gets totally ticked, really, in her own words. And she's, you know, being middle-aged, just kind of thinking she's got a right to live her own life the way she wants to live it and things of that nature. And so adding the defensive position to her level of frustration of not wanting to be disrespectful to her mom, she often just retreats and tends to shut off communication with everybody. Assessing the plot and the storyline, Shelley revealed that in her late teens, she was diagnosed with anorexia nervosa. And although she realizes that that's something that she will continue to battle all her life, at this point, she is successfully in control of that. But during this discussion, she came to the realization that her and her mother have had a strained relationship most of her life, and that her marriage, while it seems to be, you know, the current point of focus for her mother, she doesn't believe that that's the true center of the issue, and that's just one of those things that is kind of just adding fuel to the fire. So Shelley realized that she's been feeling inadequate in her mother's eyes since she was a kid. And now as a grown adult, admitting to herself that she doesn't have to measure up to anyone else's expectations was a big kind of aha moment for her at that point. Moving on and deciding what to change, her to be able to look in the mirror and actually like what she sees at this point in her life has given her really the strength to let her mom know her own feelings and realize that it doesn't have to be, doesn't like, it doesn't have to, Shelley doesn't have to own the fault, quote unquote, of however her mom feels in these particular situations, such as the choice that she made in her husband. Shelley decided to speak her mind, or Shelley has decided that speaking her mind is not necessarily in and of itself being disrespectful to her mom, but it'll actually bring her to a point of trying to get her mom to be accountable for her own thoughts and feelings and actions, and could ultimately make their relationship stronger instead of her viewing it from the negative aspect and making it weaker in terms of defining those conversations as being disrespectful. Mapping the changes beyond that, Shelley's decided that she's going to confront all negative communication head on in an effort to mitigate any underlying issues that may build up as a result of things being ignored, because she did acknowledge that while when she goes into these times of kind of shutting off communication with everyone, like most relationships, they just, you know, the frustration level with all of that just builds. And by the time she does decide that she'll talk to somebody, things are just kind of off the planet in terms of anxiety and frustration and things being added to the list of potential problems, quote unquote, in terms of what her relationship perceive the situation to be at the time. She's committed to staying true to herself and to her own happiness, and she's realizing that her decisions are her decisions, and everyone else may not agree with that, and really that's okay. It's okay with her. So authoring her new experience, she's declared that she'll no longer let people's expectations of her be the measuring stick by which she measures her own happiness and success in life. She's gone through quite a bit of time in her life, I guess trying to please others, and in doing so, she tends to silence her own thoughts and ideas as a sacrifice, really, so that other people can voice their opinions and be heard. I think she got to the point to where she's realizing that it's okay for herself to speak her mind. That doesn't necessarily mean that she's ignoring other people's thoughts and feelings. It's just bringing her own into light and fruition as well. So for programming her identity, she's, like I said, committed to staying true to herself. And she's reached a place where she knows her relationship with her mother, while she does believe that the relationship itself is full of love, she's realized that it's limited by the conditions that their mom puts upon it. And for Shelley, at this point in her life, she loves her mother, and she's realizing that it's okay to agree to disagree. So for her, she really kind of moved 180 degrees during this process here, and it was a really enlightening experience for both of us to go through the roadmap. So, Dave, I appreciate the opportunity to even do that. It was,
you know, so that's
very well.
That was outstanding, Mary Beth. Thank you. So you didn't. I was thinking throughout that you had retrospectively kind of summarized your work with Shelley in that way, but you and she were proactively going through it.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Correct.
Okay.
I have been working with her for quite a while, and there are these areas where we've touched on throughout different sessions, but I basically used the roadmap as an avenue to kind of summarize and bring to a head the things that we've been going over most recently. And so for her, it was really, really a good way to stay engaged and to stay on point and stay focused for the things that she wants to continue to employ moving forward.
So it was useful for her to really look at the work from this meta-conceptualization of the roadmap to have another level of mastery of it?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Interesting. Super. Well, thank you very, very much. I want to open it up. Questions, thoughts, reflections from anyone? Or even clarifications. Any thoughts or impressions about Mary Beth's presentation? Well, let me add a little bit to the discussion. I'm particularly impressed with this, and I think this is going to fit in nicely. I hope you can attend the mentor group in February. It's the first Monday of February, like at 1 Eastern, and I'm going to send around a white paper on attachment styles, and this is something that I'm applying to coaching that I haven't seen anywhere that's been applied, but I think it gives us useful information about the basic style of relating and connecting in important relationships that gets repeated in adult relationships and even with the coach. And, for example, here, I was thinking in the first, and just in recognizing authorship, that we're hearing an avoidant personality, somebody who is not finding the accurate empathy and nurturing from a parent, from her primary caretaker, it sounds like her mom, that is enhancing and allowing her to develop autonomously and experience effectiveness, and instead experiences intrusiveness if the adult relationship is any hint of that. So one pattern of that, if the parents are either or the caretakers are either totally unpredictable, unavailable, or intrusive, then one pattern from that, and that this usually is what happens because things go generationally. The attachment pattern that parents have usually are what the children have because they pass it on. So what Shelley did, it sounds like, is to withdraw and to kind of have an avoidant personality in a self-protective way and to protect herself from the intrusiveness of her mom and turn to an object like food that could be more predictable, where she could be more effective, and she could determine the ins and outs, something that she can be in control of and feel effective about, where she couldn't with her mom. So her work with you, then, in one way of thinking about it, is she has come to take herself as a point of reference. She's no longer taking the mom as a point of reference and orbiting around her. And even an argument is asking for permission or cooperation to maintain your point of view. She doesn't have to do that anymore. And you helped her reframe to develop an internal point of reference. Her own point of view is not disrespect, but autonomy. And she's becoming more of who she really is and developing that autonomy with her own internal point of reference. So I think she's made a major step. I don't think she'll need to be an anorexic in recovery. I think she'll need to be Shelley. And that's her own identity. The anorexia was a way station. All the stuff she's done to withdraw and protect herself were all way stations until she can finally do all of that herself and self-regulate from a position of real autonomy. Does that at all fit with how you're conceptualizing it and seeing it?
Actually, it does, and the irony of what you just said when you were talking about the parents passing that on to their children, the same sort of issue. The reason why Shelley came to me to begin with was because she recognized that the same issue was propagating between her and her own daughter.
Yeah.
There's a location, a geographical location issue to this as well. Both Shelley lives out of town, and both her mother and her daughter live in the same town. So she is continually has found herself on the outside looking in, and her mother seems to have grabbed on to her granddaughter but Shelley's daughter, and kind of, I don't want to say primed to the pump, but is kind of following along the same path of showing the granddaughter how Shelley and her do not get along very well either.
You know, that's a real danger in a situation like this, is generational skipping, because the mother is not going to change. She's going to have a burning desire to recreate that pattern, and if the daughter gets healthy, then she's going to latch on to the granddaughter and recreate it with her, because it doesn't go away, and there's a desire to recreate it like an unfilled hole that she will constantly seek that. So, you know, the next step may be for the mom to help her own daughter develop in the way that you've helped her develop. I tell you what, let me send you, there's a book that is in a PDF form, and it's audio. I recorded it. It's only about 15 or 20 minutes, and it really it grew out of a mutual storytelling group that I did over numbers of patients over 2 or 3 years with eating disorders. So it's really an allegory about the development of the sense of self. How old is Shelley's daughter?
She is in her late 20s.
Okay. Well, I'll send this all to you to see what you think about, to see if it's useful or interesting. It'll only take you about 15 or 20 minutes to listen to it. And if you feel like it would be helpful to pass on to Shelley and Shelley on to her daughter, it might be, it could be helpful. I don't know. So I'll be happy, let me make a note, I'll be happy to send that to all of you. It's called Destiny, An Uncommon Journey.
Wonderful.
Other thoughts or comments or questions about the roadmap case? Well, fascinating stuff. Thank you so much, Mary Beth. I really appreciate you sharing that and writing it up in such a cohesive and succinct way. Thanks very, very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to leave the line open if there are any questions or comments along the way. I want to talk today about your new wellness story. And this is something that I think is really, really important. I put together, and I want to share with you just the first 3 or 4 minutes of an introduction. And this is in the CDs. With the workbook that you guys can also use and co-brand. It's called Roadmap for a New Wellness Story, just to give you an idea of the introduction of it. Put together some information from research in psychology, healthcare, quantum physics, and strategic coaching to help guide you to create a wellness story for yourself. Although we'll discuss application to wellness, you'll see that the principles are fundamental to all growth, change, and success. First, a disclaimer, my mission, my hope, and my stretch goal. The disclaimer, I will not be offering advice about vitamins, supplements, how to exercise, or 1,700-calorie diets. My mission, much more fundamental, to change the way you think, specifically to be a catalyst for you to examine your wellness story, how you write it, and how you can write a new one. My hope, to guide you to look around the corner at the next years and decades of your life. What you do today can affect the quality and longevity of those tomorrows. My stretch goal, to have this time we spend together in seminar make a positive and powerful difference for you for the rest of your life. What I believe is this, that you don't need to be told again to exercise, to lose weight, to stop smoking. And if a better diet were the answer, the 273rd new one in the last 6 months would have been enough. I want to guide you to write your own wellness story. When you want to go someplace new, rather than give you directions, I'll teach you to read a map. I'll teach you the essentials to write and live a new wellness story, rather than to tell you what you should do or ghostwrite it for you. It's less immediately gratifying, but much more long-lasting and powerful. It will be your story. People are less likely to incorporate the stories of others into their own action agenda, even when they consult experts and pay them. Jeff Kinder, immediate past CEO of Pfizer, said, the percent of prescriptions that get filled is slightly less than 50%. Then, when they're filled, the compliance is slightly less than 50%. So, for people who are motivated and scared often to get help, who pay it, who go through the hassle of going to a doc, less than 1 in 4 actually follow the recommendations. It has to be your story. This is where coaching, I think, is so valuable. The light on the dashboard appears that says Service Engine Now. Now, you can go below or behind the dashboard, disconnect so it doesn't shine, and it creates an artificial sense of satisfaction that nothing's needed. But another term is denial. But once you know something, you can never not know it again. Denial is still a form of engagement, even though it's invisible above the ground. Making a physical symptom go away does the same thing. The symptom is the signal, a story in itself, a story needing and begging to be listened to and understood. Your body will simply find another way to bring you more information. And when you listen to whispers, no one has to shout. You have to have a new story to be in before you can give up an old story. Wellness is a mindset. This mindset gives ownership of a life story of wellness to the individual. With this story comes the responsibility and privilege that each thought, feeling, experience, and behavior is created each moment. Warren Buffett used the analogy of buying a car. If you get a new car every few years, the approach would be really different than if you knew you were going to choose one car and have it for the rest of your life. You'd probably do more research to know the best care for that car, probably change the oil more frequently, do everything possible for maintenance. Knowing it would be the only car for the rest of your life, you'd take meticulous care of it. Your body is the only one you'll have for the rest of your life. Your body is irreplaceable. Everything about its care and maintenance matters. It reflects the cumulative care you take of it. Wellness integrates mind, body, and spirit with a balanced flow of energy. Notice, when you have time, the wellness system of energy in Module 10. It speaks to the impact of change in a different way. So wellness is an ongoing process of choices, never static. We never stay at the same place, so it must consistently be assessed. Wellness is not something you began to plan at age 40, at age 65, or even 50. Rather, each choice you make every day writes your wellness story. And we're going to look at the process of change in an informed, systematic way. And that's the roadmap, how to recognize, own, assess, decide what to change, map changes, author new experiences, and program new identity. Now, let's look first at an overview, a new wellness story. We are in a revolution about the science of wellness and of aging. We understand how our bodies work at the cellular level. We understand healthy aging. We can live healthier lives than anyone in all of biological time. This has taken a while because health is biologically way more complex than disease. Now, I'm going to summarize some extensive research on wellness and the aging process. But first, kind of a sidebar. There are 5 great motivators in writing copy and in marketing. Fear, exclusivity, guilt, greed, and the need for approval. So there's no doubt about which of those this following resonates with. The story we engage with our bodies is one of 2 possibilities, decay or growth. So this is about fear. Dr. Henry Lodge, Jr., who wrote the perennial bestseller, Younger Next Year, and I had the opportunity to appear with him in a venue. We read each other's books, and I have been a huge fan of his since. He's devoted over 30 years of his professional life as an internist on wellness research in New York City. And there's a companion book called Younger Next Year for Women. I would totally recommend that. I've recommended that to a number of clients. He says that 70% of aging is not aging, but decay. If we assume that ailments and deterioration are a normal part of growing old, that we diminish activity and curate physically as well as in quality of life, the change on the cellular level will be decay. Inactivity and the absence of signals to grow result in body and brain decay. Okay, that's the fear part. Here's the other top five motivator. And this is greed. Now, greed can be good. It's just gotten bad press. It's defined as a rapacious desire for more. So here, it's the antithesis of fear. So the other story is that both decay and functional aging are largely optional. The alternate story is growth. We send signals to our bodies of daily exercise, emotional meaning, good nutrition, and zest for living. Here's a quote from Lodge in Younger Next Year. Steady exercise is a coded message for your body and your mind. In 20 years, failure to exercise 6 days a week will seem as self-destructive as smoking two packs of cigarettes a day. The new wellness story includes a central storyline of exercise. No negotiations, no excuses, serious exercise. According to Dr. Lodge, after age 50, 6 days a week for the rest of your life is mandatory. Now, I don't tell clients this, but I sure do refer them to the book and check to see if they've read it. Lodge emphasizes that four of those 6 days of exercise need to be serious aerobic exercise the rest of your life. Biologically, your body only knows two things, growth or decay. Blood vessels go to every millimeter of your body and each bathe cells in repair or inflammation. Exercise heals wounded blood vessels, and it's wounded blood vessels that kill you. Mortality falls with exercise. Of 3,000 people surveyed, three activities stood out above all others as ones that prompt procrastination. More than anything else, people put off, and they know exactly what to do, but they put off exercise, eating more nutritiously, and evaluating their retirement plan. Short-term desires often trump long-term goals, and emotions rule. Now, on the other hand, if we reframe this, work duties, projects, assignments are responded to routinely and promptly. This suggests that a task such as exercise be treated with the same mindset as work. With work, you don't have to get up every day and debate about whether you will or won't go to work, whether you're going to knock off a couple of days, or bargain with yourself if you're going to, you know, take off the rest of the week and get started next Tuesday, or feel righteous if you did work out. You get up, you go to work, you do it. In school, later in work, you show up. It's an organizing force, a deeply etched default mode. Whatever constitutes work, even full-time parenting, exercise can be the same mindset. Now, for some, this is like a new job. It's a full commitment, a serious commitment. It requires a plan just like your business. According to Lodge, daily exercise, like work, should be right up there, trumped only by serious illness or family needs, the default story. Now, as a coach, you're not a personal trainer. You're not a dietitian. You're not giving directives, but you can make informed recommendations, and then you can listen to how your client takes information and make choices to write the next chapter. And you're always free to challenge the choices or the trail of logic leading to them and to their fulfillment. With every client, I'll ask as part of the initial assessment, what kind of workout or exercise do you have? Now, two things, and I think this is crucial. Two things above all others create neurogenesis. That's the making of new brain cells. An enriched environment and exercise. An enriched environment of intellectual and emotional stimulation creates more complex brain structure. The hippocampus is the part of the brain that's especially connected with creativity and memory. And remember, it's in the midbrain. It's the part of our brain that attaches meaning to any stimulus that comes in. This is where our unconscious is. It's especially connected with creativity and memory. Mice from an enriched environment have an increase in their hippocampal cells, the number of their hippocampal cells, of 15%. Physical exercise increased the number of cells in the hippocampus by almost 100%, the number of cells, neurogenesis. And these findings, replicated repeatedly in the lab with mice, were recently replicated in non-invasive studies in London taxicab drivers and University of Hamburg medical students. Now, a related finding, chronic stress impairs neurogenesis. The number of cells decrease in the primary part of the brain, the hippocampus, that's associated with memory and creativity. Here are some important assorted wellness variables. One, empathy heals. Patients whose doctors show concern recover from colds faster. This is from University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. Patients of doctors who had empathic concern recovered more quickly than those whose physicians focused on only facts. There was a direct relationship between the physician's empathy level and the patient's level of IL-8, a chemical that summons the immune system to fight toxins. Two, faith and spirituality heals. The capacity for faith, the belief in something larger than ourselves, can be wired into the brain, and it happens in the right hemisphere, the right forebrain. We crave a sense of coherence and purpose. Stress and heart disease can be allayed by spiritual practices. This is from research at Duke University. Those who pray regularly had a lower blood pressure than those who do not. Another, Johns Hopkins researchers found that attending religious services cut people's risk of death of heart disease and cancer, two biggies. Other researchers found that women to whom life's meaning and purpose is central had a higher number of cells that attack specific viruses related to cancer cells. And finally, at Dartmouth, a predictor of survival in heart attack patients was their belief in faith and prayer. Now, psychologically, let me begin a different way. Traditionally, psychology has studied disease and disorder and disruption. Only more recently has it begun to look at success, at flow, at some of the positive psychology aspects. More than 60% of adults feel that spirituality, more meaning rather than more money, would add value to their lives. Spirituality is the basic desire to find meaning and purpose in life. And the left and right brain, reason and spirit, form a powerful combination. The merging of spirit and health is an integration of looking at and working with the whole person, the whole client. So, any questions or comments, don't hesitate to interrupt me. I want to revisit the notion of the framing effect with wellness in focus now. The framing effect has significant implications in choice architecture and decision-making for wellness. Here's one example of framing. A number of studies were done in which people were given free buckets of popcorn before seeing a movie, and then the results were tallied based on the post-movie weight of the remaining popcorn. In other words, each person was given a container so big they could not possibly finish it, but the results were stunning. People with the very largest buckets ate 53% more popcorn than people with the next size, the medium-sized buckets. The results were essentially the same in a number of situations across the country. Same conclusion. People eat more when they're given bigger proportions or a bigger container. Further, the vast majority of people were not aware of eating more if they had a larger bucket. They would respond by saying things, well, you know, I'm good at knowing when I'm full, or things like that don't trick me. This study shows that people don't need more knowledge or a healthier attitude about eating. Awareness of health hazards of eating so much doesn't apply, since they denied eating more or less, depending on the size of the container. So, since their attitudes, knowledge, and belief patterns don't seem to make a difference, the simple solution is use smaller buckets. Now, think about the particular kind of unawareness combined with denial. Even when told the studies were set up that way, the participants didn't believe it because they believed they ate rationally. Now, the implications here are really simple. We eat based on an external point of reference, how much we're served. There's also a recent study that I didn't include here, but it's how much more we eat when we're with one person versus two versus three, and the amount that we eat goes up exponentially, and we eat more with the most people around us because we kind of lose track or get in a different zone or just eat unconsciously. That's some striking statistics. Someone else makes a decision about the quality of food, like the restaurant, the server, and we essentially go along with it. Does the restaurant decide how much you eat by the serving portions they give? When you serve yourself, do you decide on more because you're hungry before you eat, or just because you fill your plate as an automatic behavior pattern? The size of the container as well as the portion of the food both determine how much we eat, rather than having an internal point of reference of when we are hungry and when we are satisfied and whether we make a judgment about what's in our best interest. Remember the Ben Fletcher study at the University of Hertfordshire when he had people behave a certain way for the day and then eat something twice a week they wouldn't have eaten and read something twice. They became aware of each bite they ate and began to ask, is this in my best interest? And in 4 months, average, lost 11 pounds. So for anyone to change, they have to start acting differently. Now, consider a related application. Do you settle for the retirement amount that your company decides to set aside, or do you make your own determination and commitment for your retirement? And especially since we're in our own business, we have to make our own determination now. A study by Robert Coghill demonstrated that the right dose of expectation can reduce pain equivalent to a medically active dose of morphine. This is just another application of framing. Expect pain to decrease, and it does. Expect pain to increase, and it does. One final example here about framing. When you travel, if you expect to be jet-lagged, this will impact your experience. If instead you pay attention to where you are and expect to be awake and fully functioning, even when you know you shouldn't be, if there's a really big time zone difference, this can have significant impact on your biological clock and subsequent biological rhythms. The reference point is where you are rather than what time it is at home. The reference point of where you are is how you should feel in this context rather than how you think you should feel based on the old time and the old real time at home. So, don't keep a clock like my grandmother, not the grandmother you've heard me quote and give great advice, my less favorite grandmother. She kept, nobody would fool Grandma Kruger. She kept one clock on the real time. It was her cuckoo clock. And no matter what these people did and try to fool you with all the daylight, she had one clock. She always knew what the real time was. Now, visualization of your healthy body. Have the right picture of yourself in your head. Visualization of the destination of your body and body image is at least as important as your other successes. You know, it's very much like visualizing exactly what you want to do. I couldn't get away with it, but my very good buddy did a visualization that I got to listen in on for my daughter when she ran her first Boston Marathon that she and I ran together. And I listened to his visualization, and of course I participated too. I bootlegged everything I could. So here are some consideration for visualization goals. Be certain it's your body, not somebody else's. Have the right picture of yourself in your head in current time. In other words, not your younger self 25 years ago. write down your ideal body weight range. Remember, when you write it down, you're much more likely to fulfill it. The USA Today study, 4% of people who made New Year's resolutions kept them. 44% who made them and wrote them down kept them. Tenfold difference. Write down your plan for exercise, weight, and nutrition. Write down your affirmations. Now, let's revisit, again, in terms of wellness, state of mind, and especially an effect on stress. And here are some assorted highlights. Stress contributes to 85% of all medical problems, Cooper Wellness Program. 70 to 80% of physician visits are stress-related, U.S. Public Health Survey and the UN International Labor Organization study. 52% of executives will die of diseases related to stress, Cooper Wellness. Stress is the number one reason behind sickness from work, G Publishing Survey. And finally, stress undermines work productivity in 9 of 10 companies, Industrial Society Survey. Lest there be any doubt about the need and the potential benefit of coaching, and in this application, wellness coaching. So let's extend this now to look at state of mind patterns. Here's something you'll see in working with your clients, because it's human nature. You may see the pattern more quickly in a wellness story than in other ways. A new pattern of behavior can occur for a sustained period of time. Then it can be subjugated to other, even opposing mindsets, most often a return to the comfort zone, a reversion to the familiar. Some examples. An investor makes carefully planned trades to minimize risk and maximize reward. The trader makes money consistently. As gains accrue, the trader relaxes the criteria, departs from the principles, makes unplanned trades, losses result, then has to return to the pattern of success. Another, someone who's overweight plans a weight loss program and achieves an ideal body weight, 35 pounds lighter. As soon as this target is reached, the nutritional plan is relaxed and weight is gradually gained back. Then the diet is reinstated. And finally, the independent business person carves out a number of hours, a set number of hours and time frame each week to do marketing. This plan, meticulously adhered to, results in a successful business. When it's relaxed, the marketing efforts lapse a bit, business wanes. Then the marketing time is reinstated. So in each of these instances, it works kind of like a roller coaster. The individual has a specific motivated attempts at adhering to self-control and a plan, but lapse, if that exists in the cycle, then results in having to reinstate it and do it again. People behave in one way, in one mindset, then in a different mindset when the context changes. Remember, we talked about some very recent research shows that the brain works like a Google map, that whenever there's a situation, the brain boots up the Google map that is apropos to that situation, which means we have to label the situation accurately, and we have to be aware of creating a continuity between these mindsets or these maps, and that's where the plan and the strategy comes into play. The patterns that come quickly into attention can be addressed readily. Some patterns, though, have extremely long time cycles, and recognition occurs gradually. This is a problem, because an example here would be the aging process and recognition for the need for exercise and nutrition crystallized by an event such as a heart attack. Every day, before I got to know Lodge and we collaborated about some stuff and I read his material, I worked out maybe 3 or 4 days a week. After that, religiously, 6 days a week. And every time I work out every afternoon at my biorhythm slump around 3 o'clock or so. I'm usually on the Stairmaster when the market closes at 3 Central Time. And every time I'm there at LA Fitness, I see people I know who have been there due to some kind of stressor, and their physicians have been unmitigated in their efforts to get them to go there. And they're there reluctantly, kind of going through the paces, but it's obvious they haven't had a lifetime of fitness. So this is a problem where some patterns have such a long time cycle that by the time you do them once or twice, so much time has lapsed. And this is why we can have much more effectiveness addressing these proactively before something bad happens. Wellness patterns can be addressed in small ways during the day. For example, your brain can be measured to function differently depending on the music you listen to. Doctors Gordon Shaw and Francis Rauscher showed that undergraduates who listened to 10 minutes of a Mozart sonata performed better on cognitive tests. And this is called the Mozart effect. There was a book about this. So these kinds of things of ways to address, for example, a relaxation during the day, whether that's a guided imagery, whether it's listening to music, whether it's meditation, that can also be interdigitated with a workout each day for huge wellness growth. Now, some final thoughts on storytelling, genes, and alchemy. Story is the most powerful way humans can communicate. It's been said that the secrets of great stories are the secrets of the mind, and that unlocking these secrets awakens the power of story in you. Work with that power, James Bunnett tells us, and you can steal fire from the gods. A story can transcend language, time, and culture. Our brains are wired to both need and enjoy stories. And a story has both an emotional and cognitive influence on our beliefs and decisions. Stories motivate and persuade. They appeal to our emotional capacity for empathy. Remember from the beginning of our first session, I suggested write this question down. What's my story? To think about your story. It makes you who you are. Summarize your plot in one sentence. Bullet your major storylines. Not your bio, your title, your role, but your story. Review your answers now. See what you'd revise after just 12 seminars. Now, add this question. What's my wellness story? Melanie Green, professor at UNC Chapel Hill, found that people who perform better on tests of empathy become more easily transported by a story. This empathic ability to put ourselves in another person's shoes means we can discern intent, motivation, awareness, and mental states of others. This is reflective coaching. We reflect on ourselves and develop self-empathy, we help our clients become more reflective of their experience. Week before last, attended an international conference where my wife presented on early parenting, and I talked at length with someone on the West Coast who has a nonprofit that teaches parents reflective parenting. And teaches parents how to be empathic. And some of the things that she does, and I'm going to be involved with her a bit, are the things that we've been talking about. And that's why I'm using this term now, in case you come in contact with it, about reflective coaching, because this is something that we do and has become part of what we've been talking about and incorporating in terms of New Life Story. Children develop mentalization, which is the theory of mind and the ability to think about thoughts, at about age 5. They develop a theory of mind and can imagine minds in others and make stories of things. In other words, beginning about 4 and at least by 5, with empathic parents, they recognize that not everybody thinks the same thing, that their thought and their way of looking at things is unique. It's not like just what everybody else does. Which means they also began the delicious idea of being able to have secrets, and they can distinguish themselves from their parents. and this is where you end and I begin, this is me, and this whole process of mentalization becomes part of the development of an internal point of reference, as we were talking about in the case that Mary Beth presented. Some people don't quite get to do this and have intrusive parents or parents who are unavailable or unempathic, and then they develop that with you because you're able to help them develop that reflective and that empathic ability to keep them, to develop themselves as a point of reference so that they can ultimately take themselves for granted. I mean, that's another way of thinking about what we heard. I'm sorry, I've forgotten Mary Beth, your case, Ginger, roadmap person's name. She's coming to develop a way to take herself for granted. She had taken for granted her mother's dominance and needing to fit into that. She's beginning to take herself for granted, take herself more as a point of reference. So what this means, once we develop a theory of mind, we can imagine minds in others and make stories of things. This means that we can attribute intentions and motivations to people and to the things in the world around us and test it out to see if it's accurate. Stories are a vital tool for learning as well as for developing relationships. We keep tabs on people, understand them, and spread information by storytelling. A story makes a comprehensive and complete narrative for both mind and brain. The desire to create a completeness and closure by both mind and brain is embraced in a story. We practice social skills and promote social cohesion by stories. A study by Jonathan Gottschall at Washington and Jefferson College found that stories of people around the world possess a universal theme of a common underlying biology. So it's grounded in our bodies. The power of story is emphasized by the finding that people more readily accept ideas when their minds are in a story mode versus an analytical mindset. Now, we've talked about the wellness story from perspectives of cells, mind, brain, and story. Now, a final word about genes. Epigenetics is the study of the ways in which our experiences change the ways genes operate. Our experiences program how active many of our genes will be. For example, there's a difference between having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect. Of our more than 30,000 genes, some express themselves constantly, some only at a particular time in life, some only for a certain organ of the body, and some only at certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, both, including our behavior, are reliant on each other, are interdependent. What we do as well as what we eat can turn genes on or off. A belief can turn a gene on or off. Genes do not, cannot operate independently of their environment, internal and external. Our nutrition, our emotions, and our social interactions all turn genes on or turn them off. For example, a common, simple example. When you eat broccoli, broccoli contains a form of B6, which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which contributes to synthesize dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that, among other things, stabilizes mood. So too can current, meaningful interactions, small, caring, nurturing acts, can have a powerful and lasting impact throughout adulthood. So, as alchemists, we help people see possibility to engage a transformative process. Your true story, the residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions, are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self. Who you are is what you're creating this moment. You can begin to align your relationship with everything from your money to yourself, to your wellness, by authentic conversation internally as well as externally. Wealth, happiness, joy, scarcity, fear, worry, each are mindsets. Write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. Write the truest story possible. One brief story I want to close with, and then a kind of epilogue. I'm not sure what else to call it. The story, a small boy walked up to Walt Disney and asked him how he could be like him when he grew up. Disney took this question very seriously, and he held up a finger to the little boy, you know, indicating he was thinking about it, and to wait for a moment. Finally, Disney said four words. Think, believe, dream, dare. So as you think about these seminar series that we've done and the work that you've done and reflecting with your cases with the curriculum, what if all you did in this course was master effectiveness to make changes? What if all you did in this course was to put yourself in a state that you're better at engaging people? What if all you did was to learn more about your own story? What if all you did was to learn about the potential of pleasure and of avoiding pain? What if all you did was learn to help someone be more authentic? Or to change beliefs into behavior changes that last, or even just to manage a state? What if all you did was learn to recognize belief systems? What if all you did was learn to explore your own mind? What if all you did was to develop a greater informed sense of caring? What if you decide to seize your professional story and develop a practice and a presence of massive impact and success? To sensitize yourself to the gifts and skills you already have, the power of influence to increase the quality of your life, or to recognize that these skills can make a difference for you for the rest of your life and for others who you will impact in your lifetime, or to know that your ideas will not die with you, are be limited to your direct contact, that you will leave your mark, your legacy, or to acknowledge that each new decision may affect the quality of your life. If you get any of these things, and if you commit to a level of excellence to increase the quality of your life, your practice, and your clients, then for me, this training has been a massive success. And for you, I hope this is the beginning of new possibility. You've each shared in my passion to help extraordinary people make enduring contributions. And I feel privileged to spend this time with you. I hope you'll each let me know how it's affected you now or later or whenever you decide. And I thank you for the honor of learning with you. I hope I've lived into my mission to inspire and guide you to achieve your unique, most empowered life and professional stories. That's all I got. Now you guys know everything I do. Your thoughts or questions or comments? Is everyone still aboard?
Still here, Dave.
Okay. Just check. I have had some telephone glitches recently where I have been dropped and I haven't known about it, so I was just checking. So. Thoughts or questions or comments? I'm eager to hear.
Well, Dave, I really enjoyed that part about, about 20 minutes ago, I guess, about the spirituality and how that is affecting and improving upon people's health. And, That wasn't always a huge idea for me until I came across this great magazine, which I'd like to recommend to everyone if they wanted to learn more about that. It's a really great publication that comes out 6 times a year, and it's inexpensive and just full of the ways that spirituality affects health, so much so that the title is Spirituality and Health. So if you're at an airport or at a magazine store, definitely pick up a copy and even subscribe. It is my favorite little gift to self.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an organization that my mentor coach introduced me to and took me to, like, the first 3 or 4 months meetings called Spirit Systems. And it's an application of spirituality into the executive workplace. And there were different programs and speakers. It's a terrific organization, and it's nationwide. I think it's still in existence, and it's something that can be very very energizing and creatively stimulating if you're interested in that. Thanks for that recommendation. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
We still have 3 or 4 minutes. Any other thoughts or questions or things that you'd like to talk about? Anything that you each have in mind for application of this in your practice? Is there anything more or different that this has stimulated for you to think about in terms of enhancing your practice or generating additional aspects to what you're doing professionally?
This is Tisha. And, hi. And I've been thinking a lot about this, and but I may have mentioned earlier, either to the group or to you, Dave, in a separate email, but dance is, of course, a big part of my past, but it's also it's become a part of my present again, more instead of as a career, but more as a meditative practice. And for some reason, and maybe it was just especially today's lecture on wellness, it kind of struck me how everything, in order for us to progress, I think we do need to think, or it does help to think holistically, even if we think we're focusing on our professional, you know, we have to look at all aspects of ourselves. So, and of course I know that, but it just sort of, today's lecture just sort of reminded me of that. And then I was thinking, I would love to be able to, how could I explore from a physical perspective, a notion of, and perhaps through dance, but the notion of creating one's own story and embodying it in a way that's perhaps nonverbal or not in written form, but in this more physicalized form. So it kind of got me pretty excited. So thank you for that. I don't know where that'll lead me, but I have a feeling.
Right now, do you have any just early ideas or a vision or picture of anything that you might want to explore?
Actually, yeah. I mean, you know, I think in a workshop context, I would love to explore the notion of you know, old story versus new story, and how would one almost kind of using the roadmap as an example, maybe not in one fell swoop, but just kind of focusing on creating something through movement of how we perceive ourselves or how we perceive ourselves, we think the world perceives us through our various stories, and then creating almost a story through movement of what would be what would be our story now kind of thing. And I think that would be an interesting exploration, both through verbal, written, and perhaps through movement, and just see how that, you know, how deeply that kind of transcends or, you know, kind of seeps through us as individuals and how we then ultimately embrace authorship of our lives. So,
yeah,
that
sounds like
that.
A fascinating application,
and
a really creative application for group. I can certainly envision that. One of the initial people who I've worked with eating disorders was a dance movement therapist, and she was able to really help people evolve a body image through that work. And so I have a deep appreciation of dance movement therapy. We presented at 2 or 3 national conferences on some of the work. And so So I think you're really on to something about a creative application about, you know, generating a new story through movement and in ways that can be informed by both dance, perhaps movement therapy, but also by new story and orchestrating that to have some really interesting possibilities there. That'll be fascinating to hear what you do with that.
Thank you very much. And I just also want to say thank you. Thanks to you. Your passion definitely for this work and for wanting to share it definitely gleams through. So I really do want to thank you for your time and all of this work that you're sharing with us. It means a lot.
You're very welcome. It's totally my privilege, and I've had a great time. It's been really fun, and I've loved our group and your creative input, and I'm very impressed with the roadmaps that you've done and the interaction. It's been very invigorating. And we're not done. I train only a very few people each year because I want to put effort into helping people develop practices and that sort of thing. So let me know if I can be of help. You heard some of the things I'll be sending your way, and we'll continue with the mentor groups. But I'll be interested in what you're doing, and if I can help you in any way, please let me know. So thank you all very, very much. I have had a wonderful time, and is to be continued. Thanks very, very much. Bye now.
Thank you.
Have great holidays.
You too.
Thanks.
You too.
See you guys.
Thanks.
Bye.